It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The healthcare situation has stabilized. The fears of overwhelming the healthcare system has not happened. We can control the spread. That is great news.
That was the governor of New York yesterday giving some good news for a chance. New York is, according to all the numbers we've been given, the epicenter of this virus. Be careful of your words. Sandy Rios with you this morning. I have so much to share, and so I want to do it as clearly as I can. So that's not a good way to start because that wasn't clear. But, I mean, there is some good news, and the president is going to be announcing today guidelines to start reopening the country. And I want to talk about that with you today because, according to a Rasmussen poll, which I'll give you shortly, most people in America are just frightened, more frightened that they're going to be harmed by the virus than by anything that's right at this point not real to them, the dangers of the economy. I heard yesterday that American retail has lost 50%. It's down by 50%. Millions of people will have job numbers this morning. I don't think they're out yet. If they are, I haven't heard them. There will be millions more out of work this morning. And as we know from past decades and studies that are part of our fabric, the Great Depression of the 30s, poverty is in itself a killer of people. If you can't get medical care because there won't be hospitals or doctors or medicines, then people die. If you can't get procedures, which is what's happening around the country right now, if you don't have COVID-19, you can hardly get anything done in the hospital. And I'm going to give you proof of that out of your own words, because many of you have been writing me about this. And so the reality of what's going to happen if we don't open up, even though we know that some people, yes, the COVID-19 is not going to, we can't eradicate it. It's not going to be eradicated. If we wait till it's eradicated, we'll be all living in huts, you know, cooking our one potato over an open fire. There is disease and death in this world and always has been and always will be. It cannot be eradicated. And so I want to make that point. I also want to begin to encourage you to, I had a chance to communicate yesterday with the White House that I believe one of the reasons that people are so frightened is because they hear every day in these briefings these numbers, these incredible numbers. Yesterday we heard that 4,000 more people were added to the New York City rolls. But the problem is, this is what you didn't hear. Those people that were added yesterday in the New York City rolls were never tested positive for coronavirus. I'll read you this from the Daily Caller. I have several sources on this, but I'll read their account. The adding of 4,000 people brought the coronavirus-related deaths in the city to around 10,000 people. The city decided to add 3,700 people to its death tolls who they presumed to have died from the virus. The additions increased the death toll in the U.S. by 17% and included people who were suffering from symptoms of the virus, such as intense coughing and fever. But according to the New York Times itself, the coronavirus death toll soared past 10,000 after officials added more than 3,700 people who had never tested positive for the virus but were presumed to have died of it. The report said that the Democratic New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio decided over the weekend to change the way the city is counting deaths. Public health officials say that counting the dead from a pandemic disease like COVID-19 presents difficulties because many of those who die are older or suffering from other serious health conditions. The full effects of the outbreak on mortality in New York and around the country could take many more months to study and understand. New York City is not the only city in the U.S. to include presumptive coronavirus deaths. Several health departments in Ohio announced last week they were going to begin including people that they suspected of having the virus. Dr. Anthony Fauci dismissed concerns that death rates for over coronavirus had been exaggerated. He called it a conspiracy theory. So just be aware, and I'm gonna drill down into that. If I have time, you just need to know that National Institute for Health guidelines are really bad on this. If I have a chance, I'll read them to you. And it's giving healthcare professionals the leeway to declare lots of people to be dying from coronavirus who they cannot be sure of that at all. They haven't been tested. Maybe some have been dying of other things and they can contract what they think are symptoms that might indicate coronavirus. But it's just, we can see right here that they added 4,000 people at the behest of the mayor of New York. And even though the so-called, the people that are contracting the disease have gone down dramatically in New York City, there's a problem. In fact, Andy McCarthy wrote about this too. He wrote, yes, today, it's called "The Problem with New York City's COVID-19 Death Rate Estimates." And I don't have time to read Andy's article either, but I think Andy is the one who actually quotes the CDC. I said National Institute for Health. The CDC instructs officials to report deaths as COVID-19 deaths whenever the patient has either tested positive or, despite the absence of a test, presents circumstances from which presence of the infection can be inferred within a reasonable certain degree of certainty, such that its contribution to death is probable or may be presumed. Andy goes on to say, it's not my purpose here to criticize CDC. Embarrassed or other federal health officials embarrassed by how badly inflated their models of anticipated COVID-19 deaths have proven to be, are scheming to overcount. Undoubtedly, some people will politicize the numbers to serve their own agenda. But he says critical decisions are being made based on projections and models cobbled together by federal, state, municipal, academic, and private experts. And it's a big problem, says Andy, and it certainly is, because now we're trying to talk about reopening the country, and we've got people who have a vested interest in continuing the narrative that this is a horrible disease and you're in danger at every moment of dying from it. Now, there is some danger. Certainly, those of you that are older, they say obese persons, people with medical conditions that are serious, heart problems, diabetes. That's why one of the reasons it breaks out so badly in the Black community. It seems to carry from family members living together in homes. It's transmitted that way pretty commonly. But it also preys upon people who have already weakened systems, like I said, heart disease, obesity, diabetes. And so so you have to just be wise. You have to take care of yourself like you've always had to, right? I mean, the government is not your daddy. And that's what, you know, communist totalitarian governments do. They purport to care about you and take care of you, but in reality, they treat everyone the same in socialist countries and also communist dictatorships. They treat everyone the same, and we can kind of see how that's working out now, can't we? I mean, Des Moines, Iowa is not New York City, and neither is Mississippi, New York State. And yet we've had a one-size-fits-all that's done a tremendous amount of damage. I want to go on Alex Berenson, who I hope to have on as a guest soon. Alex is that former New York Times writer who says this, the New York Times continues to slide further into its fiction this morning with this, Jim, the U.S. needs foreign doctors because hospitals are scrambling to address a shortage of medical professionals and keep a full supply of healthcare workers. They have a whole article about that. Foreign doctors could help fight coronavirus, but the U.S. is blocking many. So now the New York Times is telling us that we don't have enough healthcare professionals. We have to import people from around the country. I'm going to read email from many of you this morning that contradict that, just by out of your own mouths, your own experiences, where healthcare workers are being furloughed and laid off left and right around the country. Hospitals are being shuttered, shut down. People are not able to get care. That's what I'm hearing. And by just the sampling of those of you letting me know and the other sources that I have. Anyway, Alex goes on to say, meanwhile, back on planet Earth, hospitals are desperately laying off employees because they're so empty. And he gives a story from East Texas, Glen Falls, Trinity Health, Kalispell Regional Healthcare. He says, I keep asking, why are the New York Times and Washington Post going to such lengths to keep driving unfounded and at this point actively counterfactual narratives for as long as possible? And he says, I'm hoping that somehow it has missed the reality. They've missed the reality because the alternative is way worse. And sure it is. I mean, I think we're beginning to understand. Remember the Russian hoax? We, you know, for years, a couple of years, a year and a half, the American people fell hook, line, and sinker. Most people just taking for granted that there had been this incredible interference in with our elections from Russia, and that Russia had tried to get Trump elected, and he was probably elected because Russia was involved. And we had a full press on this: the American intelligence agencies, the FBI, the CIA, all of the press, Hollywood, and we finally sort of got the scales off of our eyes and heard other reports because of conservative media and said, Wait a second. And now we're finding out it was just an absolute lie from the very beginning. That's a subject I've neglected a bit because of the pressing issue of coronavirus. But we now know that the FBI knew in the very early stages. We have written documentation that the reports about the president in Moscow were completely false, and yet James Comey presented it to the president knowing that it was completely false and fabricated. Some said that they think that was sort of would you call it blackmail? Sort of threatening the president with that piece of information. That's what some have written, because he knew it was false. So just telling you that we have just been through one major hoax. Now, I'm not saying Corona's a hoax. We know it's a real virus. We know that we're pretty sure now, and you've probably heard in the news as of last night, that it came out of that lab in Wuhan. Now, we're pretty certain about that. We talked about it. We also know that the Chinese tried to cover it up. That's why the president is withdrawing money from the World Health Organization, because they have been using Chinese talking points, completely cooperating with the notion that China is not to blame, that maybe it was, you know, the U.S. military. China has done horrendous, horrific things. You'll be hearing more and more about that on television. I may not get into that today just because of time. Our friend Gordon Chang has been all over talking about how China and the Communist Party is just ramping up their propaganda. And I've told you about how we think they have killed their own people, ones that were infected with the virus. It is horrendous what they are doing. And yet we are entangled with them so deeply in terms of our economy and goods and services. And we have to untangle. Many are suggesting that we tell China they must forgive our debts. We're not paying our debts back to them because they have cost us so much money. Trillions, as a matter of fact. And you could argue they've cost the world money. They put so many economies, especially Europe's. Europe's economies are not as strong as ours, except perhaps Germany. Germany, I guess, would be the only one. The rest are creaking under the weight of this. England, Great Britain certainly is. And so, for the president today will announce new guidelines for reopening the country. He also said something last night, and I think I'm not going to have time to play the clip. I wanted to because it's so important. This is an issue that I've been talking to you about for more than a few years. And that is the fact that the Senate has not, and the House, but the Senate is primarily the culprit, been passing through the president's nominations. People that I know, people that I don't know but I know of, who know people that I know, have been waiting to be hired by this administration since the administration came into power. And instead, never-Trumpers were hired. People that were Obama holdovers were hired, and people that were loyal to the president and held his views on what should happen in this nation never got calls. Many of them gave up jobs expecting to be hired, and they weren't. The president exploded last night in the press conference and dared the Senate and the House. He said they're derelict in their duties. They should be here in Washington. They should be confirming these nominees, and they're not. And he said, if they do not come back, I'm going to declare them recessed, and I'm going to start doing recess appointments. It was a stunning moment, maybe most important thing that happened last night. And it's about time that somebody explained to him why he is being served so poorly by Mitch McConnell on these nominations. And also, needless to say, by Nancy Pelosi in the House. And so he's demanding that they come back and do their job. Okay, I'm going to take a break. Sandy Rios back in a minute.
Every day, babies in their mothers' wombs are fighting for life. with abortion being the leading cause of death.
I already had my mind made up. I was like, I'm going to go through with it.
The Ministry of Preborn has pregnancy centers nationwide, standing by to help young moms in crisis choose life. Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country. By letting a mother see her baby in the womb and hear the heartbeat, she's 80% more likely to choose life for her baby.
I came seeking termination, but once I got here and I took an ultrasound, I was overjoyed when I found out that I was having three baby boys.
Preborn's mission is to help save babies' lives and souls. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Your love can save a life.
So I don't know if you saw this, but there was just this big study about anxiety among us. Really interesting in this study about what can keep us up at night. One of the top stressors out of all the things to worry about is paying for healthcare. A huge majority of us say we're worried about that. It's totally understandable. But there's an affordable alternative to health insurance. It's MediShare. It's a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and it has worked beautifully for more than 25 years. And not only do people save lots of money, they get access to a huge network of doctors. They get to take advantage of 24/7 live access online where they can talk to a doctor and even get prescriptions. And of course, there is the savings. With MediShare, the typical family saves $500 a month. That can help you sleep easier too. There's a lot to love about it. No wonder it's grown so much. Here is the number to find out more. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. I need you to do something right now, folks. Text #250 with the keyword baby. We are in a crisis point in American history, and there is growing concern that the nation's abortion rate is about to explode. So I need your help right now to save the life of an unborn child. And that's why I'm partnering with Preborn, an organization equipping pregnancy centers with ultrasound machines. 80% of women who have an ultrasound save their child. So get on your phone right now, text #250 with the keyword baby. Text #250 with the keyword baby. Almost 95% of the nation is on lockdown. The medical experts predicted more than 2 million would perish. Those numbers have been revised to around 60,000, and now the validity of that number is in doubt. A Stanford University professor tells Fox News the death rate may be significantly lower, and the facts do seem to back that up. Hospital ships sent to Los Angeles and New York are virtually empty. And on my national talk show, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs delivered a stunning pronouncement. The VA offered more than 7,000 beds to the public during the pandemic. To date, he said not a single bed has been used, not a one. The loss of just one person is a tragedy, no doubt. But as it now stands, the coronavirus could be less deadly than the seasonal flu. And that's excellent news, but it's also troubling news because someone needs to explain why we shut down the country and sacrificed our civil liberties. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We have a tremendous number of people that have to come into government, and now more so than ever before because of the virus and the problem. We have to do it, and we have to do whatever we have to do. They've made it very, very difficult to run government. I don't think any administration has done anywhere near what we've done in 3.5 years. But every block, every week, they put up roadblocks. Whether it's Russia, 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 or whether it's impeachment hoax or whatever it may be, it's always roadblocks and a waste of time. If the House will not agree to that adjournment, I will exercise my constitutional authority to adjourn both chambers of Congress. The current practice of leaving town while conducting phony pro forma sessions is a dereliction of duty that the American people cannot afford during this crisis. It is a scam what they do. It's a scam, and everybody knows it. And it's been that way for a long time. And perhaps it's never done before. It's never been done before. Nobody's even sure if it has, but we're going to do it. We need these people here. We need people for this crisis, and we don't want to play any more political games. I've been waiting for 2.5 years, 3 years for some of these people. And they're great people. They left law firms. They left jobs. They gave up everything to do it. And they've been waiting for 3 years, 2.5 years, 2 years, 1 year to get approved. It's ridiculous. And everyone knows they're going to be approved. But there's only so many hours in the day when you go through judges and you go through lengthy hearings on judges that they know should be approved immediately. And they could do it in one session, and they could do it in 1 hour. And instead, it takes them many days.
All right. So, you know, he said what he's talking about is they do what they call pro forma session. So whether it's the House or the Senate, they know that if they gavel out, the president can take actions as the executive that don't need their permission. And that includes some recess appointments. But if they don't gavel out and they keep it in what they call pro forma, then he can't do anything. And that's really what they've been doing, so that he has not had the the ability to do recess appointments. I wish we'd had the part where he talked about Michael Pack, whose heads would be heading I'll think of it in a second. It's our Voice of America. Thank you, Adam. The Voice of America broadcast has just become a leftist tool. It is horrendous, and the president talked about that. And Michael Pack, who was our guest recently, he's the one that produced that Clarence Thomas movie. Michael has been was nominated 2.5 years ago to oversee Voice of America and other things like that, and his nomination has been held up. And so the president is getting steamed, and I'm so glad. I'm so glad, and maybe he can actually do something. By the way, it is constitutional that he can actually officially declare both houses recessed. And I don't have time to go into that right now, but it is constitutional. All right, I want to talk about what's happening. Yesterday, up in Lansing, Michigan, thousands of people descended on the Capitol. Why did they do that? Because their governor Whitmer, has, of course, instilled these draconian rules that have just made life so oppressive in Michigan. And so, from not being able to buy seed or buy paint, having the box stores now only able to sell, and you're only able to buy like groceries or medicines, but nothing else in the stores, telling people that they can do certain things on the water, but they can't do other things, like you can't fish. Telling you now you have to stay in your house and you can't visit with your families, you can't visit with your friends. Just unbelievable things. And so yesterday in Michigan, tens of thousands of people gathered in Lansing, which is the capital, staying in their vehicles. It was called Operation Gridlock. It was organized by the wife of one of the state reps there. Her name is Michonne Maddock. And Michonne was talking about all of this. She said that they tried to get people to stay in their vehicles because the governor was, of course, critical. You're putting people's lives at risk if you're doing this protest, et cetera. But they want their state back. And many of you listening, I think, at least some of you listening, were at that protest because I was in contact with some of you. And I would love to hear from you. If you went there, what you saw, what you were trying to say by attending. Also, it's not just Michigan I want to hear from today. I actually really want to hear specific ways that this shutdown has affected you. Whether it can be anything. It can be your business. It can be your family income. It can be your health. It can be whatever, your personal freedoms. I would really love to hear how this thing has affected you. It would be very helpful for me to know that. So our phone number is 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. You guys, I think the phone lines are still locked up according to my screen here, so just saying. All right, so I'm going to go back to some of the email that you guys have been sending. I actually did make through most of it this morning. These are just some examples of what people have been saying here. Ronnie is from West Tennessee. He says, I live in West Tennessee, and on a John Hopkins map that displays the number of cases and deaths, it shows 68 cases and 2 deaths in Bell County, Tennessee. Trouble is, there's no Bell County in Tennessee. And so he's suspicious. And I just would start by before I start this, I always say to you that truth is what comports with reality. You know, people can say all they want, and you have to consider you don't automatically, unless you know a person that's really bad character, you have to take people at their word. But you have to consider what you're seeing, the preponderance of evidence. What are you seeing? What with your own eyes, what are you seeing? Here's another one. This is from Pastor Don in Royal Virginia. Pastor, thank you for your kind, kind words. He said he likes to listen. He tells his congregation about the show all the time. So, parishioners of Pastor Don, I hope you're not upset with him for doing that. But I appreciate, I'm kidding. I'm honored that you would do that. I really am. He sent me a YouTube clip, and basically the person speaking is saying that he and his staff researchers have dug up the CDC stats and discovered that both regular influenza cases and deaths have dropped dramatically this year to near zero rates. What he's saying is, and I heard this yesterday in another briefing, that the overall death toll, what I heard yesterday is slightly different. I think in the month of March in the United States is down. So that would indicate, would it not, and I think that's what Stephen is saying in this YouTube video, that it would just say by the numbers that deaths are being counted and attributed to COVID that are not due to COVID. How would you suddenly have a drop in the death rate or no increase in the death rate if we have such a serious pandemic? It makes no sense. And so something's up with the numbers. That's what Pastor Don says, and I think he's right about that. Like I said, truth is what comports with reality. This is from a friend of mine. She says it has a niece in Indiana who's a nurse practitioner. She managed 17 emergency rooms, and she's been laid off or furloughed. She has another niece from Indiana. Her hours have been reduced to 8 per week because they have no patients. This is from Sam, who's a pharmacist. He said, I just spoke with a person who disposes of our expired and recalled medications. He travels throughout the state of Mississippi and recently in Louisiana. He visits our hospital every 3 months. We discussed at the hospitals in Jackson, Baptist, North Mississippi Medical Center, Forest General Hospital, Health Systems, River Oaks, Merritt Health are ghost towns. They have patient volumes down 25 to 50% in some locations. Staff are being let go, furloughed, hours reduced, shifts rescheduled to minimize staff. What really caught my ear is that this guy he talked to travels to all, if not 80 to 95% of the hospitals, and said they are empty. He said even in the biggest ones, especially University of Mississippi Medical Center and Ochsner's in New Orleans, he said the last time he visited both of these hospitals, he parked in the parking garage on the first floor. He normally parks on the third to fifth levels. He said there are hospitals all throughout both states that are 10 to 25% full. He said the hospital in Poplarville, Mississippi has zero patients. He says it's the same with our hospital. They're shutting down normal service for the influx of Wuhan coronavirus patients. Problem is, the patients aren't coming. And so he's saying, open up the economy. And I agree. And this is what I'm seeing. And that's why I'm saying what I'm saying. And I also want you to understand that the president, if you agree, if this is what you're seeing with your own eyes, and you agree that it is the truth, we're going to have to help the president in any way possible and the governors of the various states, because they are going to be blamed for any death. And you know that the left will find deaths that are directly due to opening the economy. You know that, don't you? It will be Ron DeSantis in Florida. It will be the governor of New Mexico, South Dakota, Kristi Noem. They'll have blood on their hands, according to the media and the Hollywood elites. This is what they are facing. I'll just give you an example. In D.C., just in the last 24 hours, there is a message that's being projected, like through a projector, onto Washington, D.C. buildings, and it says, Trump is killing us. Trump is killing us. That's what the president is facing, and that's why he said this is one of the biggest decisions of his life. I want to read this also before I go to the phones. Amanda says, I live in a rural community in the Midwest. We are close to a few cities with small and mid-sized hospitals that are part of a larger health network. All satellite clinics and surgery centers have closed. My husband, who is a safety and security manager in one of those networks, works in a facility that is now a ghost town. There are, to my knowledge, no COVID-19 patients in his facility. Employees are being sent home from shifts due to low census. Nurses and techs from the satellite facilities are being given the option to cross-train for other positions. If they opt not to, they're being laid off. Another nearby smaller hospital is struggling to stay open. Employees who work inside the hospital in non-essential roles are out of jobs, including one young woman that I know personally who relied on her job to pay college tuition. Our small community experienced a non-essential goods ban and stood by as signs were posted in big box stores prohibiting the sale of socks, cosmetics, toys, books, and electronics. Those who instituted the ban continued to operate their own small business because All animals are not equal, but some animals are more equal than others. We must be shrewd enough to, at the very least, question the wisdom of these decisions. The ease with which we are handing over basic freedoms is frightening. That's from Amanda. All right, I have a lot more I could read, but I do want to stop and take some of your calls, especially if you were in Michigan yesterday at that rally. I would love to know what you saw, what you experienced, but in all the other states, the people who listen, what has been your experience with this, your personal story of how it's affected you, in a short form, okay? Here we go. Let's go to Catherine in Virginia. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning. Thank you for your show, first of all. As a stylist, we kind of question some things that Ralph Northam is allowing out here. We're straight commission people, and if we don't work, we don't get paid, no benefits, whatever. But he does allow us to go to homes and do people's hair, but we can have them in the salon. And I find it interesting that he finds that the ABC stores and abortions and all they consider essential. So my question is, what are they basing their essential anythings on according to biblical principle and constitutional principles? So, but that's what we're kind of experiencing out here. And I'm finding that the harder he can hit at the heart of our nation, which is small businesses, the more control he does have. So I just wanted to share with you kind of what was going on, as if you didn't already know, but just to hear from just talking to other fellow stylists and seeing that they could lose their businesses and lose their homes and lose so much, that's just one of the concerns.
Catherine, thank you. I'm going to let you go, but I'm going to comment on that. Thanks so much for your call. You know, one of the things we talked a great deal about when Barack Obama was president was that the going back way to Marxism, Karl Marx wanted to destroy the middle class because the middle class is the class of people like you and me who do the resisting. We have enough to survive, enough to be happy and to be a little bit independent. We are the ones who give a lot to, you know, we give generously to churches, to charities. We are the worker bees, and I'm proud of that. I work hard, and I think that's a thing. I think anybody, if a person cleans toilets in the bathroom, I respect and admire them. I do not admire idleness of any class. We are the worker bees. We contribute to society, but we're the ones that fight back. Rich people often, and I like rich people. I have lots of friends that are rich, and they're not all this way. This is a generalization. But for the most part, rich people are comfortable and content, and they are not willing to get their hands dirty in fighting. And also, they often are padded from the bad decisions that government makes. So Karl Marx wanted to destroy the middle class. And so Barack Obama certainly made no bones about that. The IRS targeting middle class folks and trying to shut organizations down. Because, you know, if the middle class should go, churches would fail. Because who do you think gives money to churches? You think it's certainly not the poor. There are many poor in church, but they can't give. The middle class bears the burden of that. The wealthy give many of them very generously, but they are not what most churches do not depend on wealthy people to sustain their coffers, and nor do charities, unless somehow big endowments. But most Christian charities don't have that. So we're the ones that fund these independent groups that fight back. The Judicial Watch or other organizations. And so, yes, by targeting small business and the way that the vast majority of Americans earn their living is through small business or being employed by small businesses. It's not the major corporations. It's a gut punch. And don't think that this is not part of a plan. The other part of this is if they can sustain the notion that you should be scared to death about coronavirus and not go out, and that everything should happen in your home, they can, if they can do this to November through the presidential election, they're right now, as you know, pushing mail-in voting. And some are saying, oh yeah, that would be safer. I could be safer if I voted by mail-in ballot. But the problem is, your mail-in ballot could be co-opted. It could be misspent. It could be taken by someone else, and maybe not yours. Yeah, but probably yours. You should be able to show an ID in the states that require that and verify. Lots of fake ballots go out, bad addresses. Lots of people are harvesting those ballots, and they are changing election outcomes. No, we don't want mail-in ballots. No, and so we can't allow them to continue this false narrative and through to November. Sandy Rios in the morning.
The borrower is the slave of the lender. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Newly published information from Lifeway Research shows 77% of self-identified Christians in dozens of states think it's a sin to lend money to someone who can't afford to pay it back. Still, few say payday loans are immoral, and one in six Christians has admitted to taking out a high-interest payday loan. The federal government's Consumer Financial Protection Bureau says a typical two-week payday loan charges the equivalent of a 400% interest rate. These sharks prey on the poor, elderly, and most vulnerable in society. Sound the alarm and make sure your family, church, and neighborhood steer clear of this vermin.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
In every journey, there's a danger of losing your way. So how do we stay steadfast in the journey of faith? That's our subject as we begin a study of the book of Hebrews. We're learning to fix our eyes on Jesus all this week on Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at AFR.net.
Today's culture is opting for entertainment rather than biblical enlightenment. For those who resist that trend, Friends of Israel shows listeners why loving the Jewish people and supporting Israel is important to the Christian faith. Friends of Israel shares biblical truth about Israel and the Messiah and promotes solidarity with the Jewish people.
This is Chris Katulka of the Friends of Israel Today radio program, heard each weekend on this station, and here's what's happening in Israel.
Friends of Israel, Saturday afternoon at 2, here on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with the Life and Liberty Minute. All of us have been on the receiving end of some nasty, hurtful, and destructive things done to us by other people, and some part of us craves justice. But Solomon has some counsel for us. We are not to try to get even with those who have harmed us. Instead, we are to place our trust in God to get justice for us. He promises he will. He sees the destruction. He sees the betrayal. He sees our loss, and he has all of his divine power at hand to make things right, and he will in his time. He has his own timetable for dispensing justice and his own methods. What he wants from us is a willingness to trust his wisdom, power, and timing, and not take matters into our own hands. As Solomon says, "Do not say, 'I will repay evil.' Wait for the Lord, and he will deliver you."
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. A lot of Americans whose lives, families, financial prospects, and futures have been severely impacted by the Chinese Communist Party virus want to punish the perpetrators. There's talk about ways in which to make China's dictator and his government pay for the damage they've done. So it's simply unbelievable that an unaccountable federal panel is beavering away at what would amount to a huge reward for Xi Jinping's communist regime. The Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board is poised to invest billions of dollars of U.S. government employees' pension funds in CCP companies. 11 influential veterans have urged the Joint Chiefs of Staff to recommend that President Trump stop this travesty, made all the more outrageous as it would compel military personnel to invest in Chinese corporations that make weapons designed to kill them. Add your voice to theirs at presentdangerchina.org. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios with you. I want to go right to the phones because there's so many great comments up there. I want to just say I was going to play a clip, but we'll tell you that Joe Behar had an interaction with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in which they were laughing about how they are being able to implement a socialist agenda because of this crisis and how convenient it is. And then I had one of Senator Kennedy talking about how if we don't open the economy, it will totally collapse. And I guess that's the thing I want to communicate to you this morning. There are other dangers. It isn't just the danger that you may feel because every night you hear about these numbers. and see, you know, images. By the way, CBS replayed again that picture of the Italian hospital early, in the early stages of COVID over there, where it was so desperate, and now claimed it was Philadelphia. They did it earlier, what, a week ago, about New York City. They were caught doing it. They said, oh, it was a mistake, and now they're doing it again. This is the kind of manipulation that is just frightening. I want to one person I want to respond to, Robin, is a nurse in a community hospital in Tennessee, and she's very upset with me. She's a faithful listener. She said she turned me off because she can't believe I'm insinuating that doctors and hospitals are listing patient deaths as being from COVID-19 to be able to make more money. She says it's so insulting, and she said, shame on you for trying to give the appearance that death rates are being manipulated for medical profit. Robin, just I'm sorry that you were so offended, but let me just say this. I certainly not all medical professionals are doing this, but are you telling me that you don't think any hospitals would be motivated by profit, any of your administrations? Really? You really think nationwide, I'm talking about nationwide, not your hospital. Maybe you, your people have a lot of integrity. But I do think there's a financial incentive to claim a COVID-19 status for some patients. And you know, you could help me tremendously if you are still listening. If you told me what's happening in your hospital, you did not say that. You didn't say how many COVID patients, if you're full staffed, if people are being laid off, you know, what you're actually seeing. That would be, or if you're seeing a lot of patients and it's all true, it's actually happening in your hospital. It's just overwhelmed. I would love to hear that, because then I could say, there is another story with a different, that goes differently, but I don't, you did not send that to me. So please do. That would be very helpful. All right, our phone number is 888-589-8840. Let's go to Michigan. Mickey was at the rally yesterday in Lansing. Mickey, good morning. How was it?
Good morning. Oh, Sandy, it was such an uplifting thing. As I live about an hour and a half from Lansing, and as I traveled there, I joined up with people that were going for the same purpose, and there were flags and there were signs. People waved at each other. As we got closer to the Capitol, it was just, everyone was courteous. There was no rudeness. They were observing the 6 foot, you know, everyone was very good. I didn't see anything negative except for there were some protesters that were protesting the protesters. And they, you know, had signs saying rednecks go home, and they raised their middle finger at us, and had loudspeakers saying go home. But for the most part, it was all just very positive.
Let me just say, Mickey, hang on 1 second. Let me just repeat to those of you just tuned in. This is a rally in Lansing, Michigan yesterday. Thousands of Michiganers drove their cars into the state capitol, their trucks, their lawn care, their business trucks, and just did a protest in their cars for the most part protesting the Governor Whitmer's draconian rules and regulations. Okay, Mickey, continue, please.
So I noticed that the media had picked up that there was a Confederate flag. There were hundreds of U.S. flags flying. And so for them to pick that out was pretty ironic.
Mickey, why did you go?
I did not see one.
Why did you go?
I wanted to stand up for the workers. I am a bus driver, so the state has decided to pay me through the end of the school year. Doesn't affect my life. But my husband is in construction. He has a small construction crew, and they aren't allowed to go work. And they're out, you know, they're not affecting anyone. But they will be fined, or their license will be taken away if they're caught working at this time. And so I went to represent my husband and his crew and all of the people that are really being harmed by this excessive order.
Yep, Mickey, God bless you. I wish we had more time to talk, but I appreciate you calling. And I'm really, see, you're a great example to people of, you know, we are going to have to put pedal to the metal and do something. And I think also it's a great example of my understanding that, you know, the rally was very, for not just from your mouth, but from others, that it was very respectful. And you guys try to keep the guidelines of the social distancing just because you were there not to disrespect law. Or rules or regulations, but to assert that you are American citizens. And we do have a right to our own destiny. You know, we're smart enough to know when to stay home and when we can go out. We actually are. And it has gone way over the line. And they are trying to take away rights and privileges that are given to us in our Constitution and our Bill of Rights that we should not be giving up. It is time to speak up about that. Mickey, thank you. Let's go to Jason in Virginia. Jason, you're a first responder?
Yes, ma'am. I'm a paramedic here in Virginia.
So how's this affecting you? What are you seeing?
Well, unfortunately, I think I'm going to only confirm what you already know. We've got two standalone emergency rooms who've shut down because they don't have enough patients to stay open. We're a rather large department, about 500 of us. I think 125 of us have been tested. No one's came back positive for COVID. We've transported probably, between 50 and 100 COVID-positive patients. But they've all come from nursing homes. Very few have come from home or, a citizen that's in their home. They've pretty much all come from these nursing homes. They've talked about maybe cutting our pay because of the economy of our particular county. We don't think that's going to happen, but nothing's off the table. But that's how it's affected us here.
Jason, can you say where you are in Virginia? Do you mind or not? I don't want to.
It's the, I'll tell you, Richmond metro area.
Okay. Well, that helps to know. All right, Jason, I'm actually collecting all your stories today for a good purpose. So I appreciate you telling us that, Jason. God bless you. And hopefully, God willing, the American people can take back their country from this madness. Thanks a lot, Jason. Let's go to Ellie in Kentucky. Good morning, Ellie. What's your story there?
Hey, Sandy. I'm in Kentucky. And I do insurance coding for a local hospital. These codes are what we send to insurance companies to get paid. They update every October. But with these COVID codes, when they first came out, they've updated 3 and 4 times in 2 weeks' time.
Now, what does that mean, Ellie? What does that mean?
That means they're trying to make sure that these codes are saying, okay, we're going to just screen you. You've not been around somebody with COVID, but you've got a cough. So we're going to slap this code on here and screen you for COVID. Or it's saying, oh, you work with somebody that's been diagnosed. So we're going to give you this code to show that you've been around somebody. You've been exposed. Or you've got cough and fever. You've got all of these symptoms. So now we're going to test you for it. That's what that means. And, I mean, we're putting this code on I don't know how many people. Our ERs are people coming in, especially in the bigger cities, with cough and shortness of breath. And they're going to test them for COVID.
All right. So, Ellie, let me – I just want to be real clear. So are you saying that they are then, do you think that translates to numbers being elevated because the people are not necessarily COVID or what? Make it really plain because you're in the medical profession and this is your bailiwick. Help us understand what it is you're trying to say here.
I agree with that. Yes, exactly what you've just said. They're pumping up the numbers to say, oh, we've got this many cases in the state of Kentucky that's come in and you've got COVID. Or they're not saying we're testing. Or they're saying we don't have enough facilities to test or enough kits to test, but they're testing people.
Yeah.
And I've heard people say, well, they wouldn't test me because they didn't admit me. But that's not true because I'm seeing people are getting tested and they're not being admitted. And then we've got people that's tested positive and they get discharged. So you've got people that they're sending home. They're not admitting them to the hospital. They're sending them home to be quarantined to 14 days.
But they're counting them in the numbers. Ellie, I had heard early on, I think I said this on the air, that when they say, 450,000 people have COVID, it's such a huge range. And I've heard doctors say, you can't do that. Somebody that maybe has it, has no symptoms, or all the way to the range of somebody that's on a respirator in the same category is just wrong and misleading. So we've got all kinds of nonsense going on here. And Ellie, thank you. I do appreciate your story. And keep listening, and we may need to hear from you again. So thank you. Let's go to Shannon in Florida. Good morning, Shannon. Are you in high school? Did I understand that correctly?
No, my daughter is.
Your daughter is. Okay. So what's your story, Shannon?
Ellie has she's a bright kid. She just turned 18. and she has a 504 for learning disabilities. And she's been working with the guidance counselor and teachers to not have to do so much outside work and things that needed to be turned in on the computer. Before going to completely online because of this, the school's being closed, she was an AB student and on track to get a Bright Futures scholarship in college. Last week, she had so much work to get done and turn in online all at once by that Friday midnight deadline that it was overwhelming, and she didn't get it all turned in. Now she officially has failed a class, and she won't be able to graduate.
Oh, gosh. Well, Shannon, that's a story that nobody would have guessed, you know? That's a tragedy. That's the kind of thing. I just heard from a woman last week whose husband has been deployed for a long time. She's, you know, by herself with her kids, and she was expecting him home last week, and he couldn't come home because of the COVID-19, not because he's sick, but because of he's on a ship, I think. And so the untold costs, the kinds that people can't even imagine, are every bit as real. I've weddings canceled. You know, my son, this is not a big deal for he's in St. Andrews, and their graduation was canceled. And it's not the end of the world. It's not a life or death thing. But there are human costs that we can't even imagine. And this one for your daughter. Well, hopefully, Shannon, things will get back to normal, and she can reenter that and repeat. Surely someone there will help her to work this thing out so that she can have a do-over. If I were her teacher, I sure would. And so that's what we'll pray for on your behalf. Thank you for that sad story for her, and I wish her our very best. Let's go to Ohio and talk to Diane. Good morning, Diane.
Hi, Sandy. Hello?
Yes, ma'am. What's on your mind? Quickly, if you can.
Okay, all right. I live in Ohio, and they canceled our voting, our in-person voting back when it should have been, and now it's April the 28th, and I waited till the last minute. I've never mailed in a voting thing in my life, and now they're making us mail in our voting, and I just hate it because I know how many bad things can be done.
Yeah, you know,
and I told her, I said, I will bring that ballot and put it in the slot the voting day. She said, well, I would do that too.
Yep.
If I would be you.
Yeah. Well, that's good advice, Diane. You know, I don't know if you know this. I will only know this by circumstance, but the health care person that your governor, DeWine, put in place was an Obama supporter. And she has been the one who has been driving, as I understand it, that whole change in voting, driving Governor DeWine's response to this, because he's, you know, been following her lead. Now, I'm extrapolating here because I don't know her, but she's the one that initially in your state claimed that there were so many, she estimated, she didn't say it at the time, she said there were going to be something like some incredible number, like 200,000 Ohioans either were going to be, catch the virus or they were going to die. I can't remember the particulars, but later she admitted, oh, I was just guessing. And so that's what you've got in Ohio, and you need to be aware of that. Your governor, I think, made a huge mistake by appointing her, and maybe kind of like President Trump, maybe making a huge mistake and leaning on Dr. Fauci, given his real resume, which is his very dear love and closeness to Hillary Clinton. That might have been a problem. So that's you know, enough for to put in your pipe and smoke it. Listen, only God can sort this out, and he certainly can. With man, it is impossible, but with God, all things are possible. So let's stay prayerful and vigilant and look for the truth, the real truth. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.